coming to the end of our series in Hebrews chapter 11 as we've been going through and studying the heroes of faith. I've enjoyed going through this study, and we're just about to the end here where the writer has given us some specific heroes of faith that who exhibited their belief in God and how that was played out in their life. And then the writer begins to conclude with words of encouragement to those that he's writing to, especially those that are suffering. And as was read this evening, the writer says, "What more can I say?" And so that's really the title of this portion of this lesson. What more can I say? The point is that he says he could go on and on about the great faith of many people who lived for God that came before us that could be pointed to as examples. The idea here is it would take too much time and too much space to continue talking about the great faith of people like Gideon, who is mentioned, who was willing to tear down his father's idols and lead Israel to victory with only 300 men. Barak, as we talked about this morning, who served with Deborah in judging Israel. Samson, with his great strength, judging Israel. I know that's coming up in our classes in our study through the book of Judges. David was mentioned here, who repeatedly showed great faith in his life, especially when he was younger, when we see him going up against Goliath, which is a great example of relying God on his victory and on his deliverance. Samuel was also mentioned, a great judge who served the Lord fully. And so the writer goes on to describe the other great acts of heroes of the past and what they did. And as you go through this section, it talks about women who received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept the release that they might receive a better life. There's those that are said to escape the edge of the sword, made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. And when you get into the next section, apologize. This slide presentation has always hung up between slides. The verse 36 talks about others mocking and flogging, chains and imprisonment. And so the point here is that there's a lot of people that are mentioned that we're not told who they are. And so I can't tell you exactly who is being talked about. And in some cases, there are examples that we can look at. Who is it talking about who stopped the mouths of lions? Well, that could be Daniel, which would certainly, fit with what we know about Daniel, or it may refer to some other of the judges who are said to have defeated lions. There's discussion sometimes about who is this one that was sawed in two, and so there's speculation it could have been Isaiah, who is believed to have been song in two under the rule of Manasseh. But, that's not really the point of the text, is to try to figure out who all these unnamed people are what they represent or who they represent. The idea here is not that you're going to play a game of who did this or who is it. It's talking about faith, and that's what we are referencing here. So what we want to consider is the common factor in all these descriptions is that all these people were people of great faith, and it was their faith that caused them to be able to do the things that they did or to put up with the things that they did when it comes to persecution and those kind of things. So look at what these people did through faith. They conquered kingdoms. They enforced justice. They obtained promises. They stopped the mouths of lions. They quenched fire. They escaped the edge of the sword. They were made strong out of weakness. They became mighty in war. They put foreign armies to flight. They received their dead back by resurrection. So there's all these things that were done, and they were done through faith. And so the point is really clear when we think about what these heroes did, and that is that great faith does great things. And that's what this whole chapter has been about in Hebrews chapter 11. that great faith does great things. How were they able to do it? How were they able to shut the mouths of lions, administer justice, and gain strength after being weak? How could they fight in the battle? The answer, according to the writer of Hebrews, is the faith that they had. So, the question for us is, what great things are we doing? Is there anything great that we're doing for the Lord? And if we're not doing great things, if our faith is not evident in our life, and maybe it's time that our faith grows a little bit. And I know these are examples that are extreme, and they did some things that were very noteworthy, and you may not feel like you've done anything real noteworthy in your life. That's really not the point, but the point is that you have a faith that stands up in the midst of whatever it is that you come face to face with. That faith caused action in each one of these people's lives. Faith is what caused them to act. And so, you know, is our great thing that we have sat on a pew every Sunday? You know, is that the greatest thing that we've done? Certainly, that shouldn't be. It should be something that we do accomplish, but certainly that wouldn't be all, hopefully, that we have to offer. That's not going to stack up really, really well. Obviously, we're not talking about the need to go out and fight a lion, and I'm not going to encourage anybody to go do that. You know, we're not talking about going out and trying to subdue nations. The greatness here is not defined by human wisdom or human standards, but the great things that are pointed out here by God's standard are ones that have been done for the Lord because of the faith that they had. Some things that we can do that show our faith is we can reach out to try to teach others. That's certainly something, I won't say it's very easy, but it's something that should be very common in our life that we try to do that. That we try to share the message of the gospel. And the Hebrew writer, of course, makes that very criticism that there is a time that people should be teachers, but many times they're not. Instead of eating meat, they're still drinking milk. And there is a time that we as Christians ought to be teachers. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12. By though this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you. Again, the first principles of God's revelation. You need milk and not solid food. So it is a great thing for us to be a teacher and to be teaching. And if you're not yet, to work toward that. And that doesn't mean that you have to feel comfortable standing up in front of an audience. You can be a teacher to your family. You can be a teacher to your friends. You can be a teacher to your coworkers to teach the spiritual things of God. It's very important for parents and grandparents alike to teach their children the scriptures and teach them the importance of God and the importance of serving God. That is a great thing that needs to be done. It shows faith. And it requires that we not be lazy. And we not only need to teach our children, but we need to try to teach as many as, you know, teach others' children as well when we have the opportunity. It's a great thing when our children, when they're little, they have friendships with others and we have an opportunity to be around them and we can bring them to services, we can study the Bible with them, and they can see. If they don't experience it at their own homes, they can see what it is that the Christian family, somebody that serves God, you know, acts like and behaves like and what they do in their service to God. And there have been many people that have been encouraged by that and been taught the gospel because of the actions of others. They didn't see it in their home. They may not have seen it with their own family or grandparents, but it was because somebody else was an example to them that they were able to learn the gospel. And so that's one thing that we can do in our teaching. And there's probably not a more important thing that parents can do is to teach their young children the Word of God. There's nothing that's more important. Our jobs are not more important than that. We need to be teaching one another. And it starts by being a good student of the Bible ourselves. And we have to prepare ourselves to do that and to take on that responsibility. So We can teach, we can also preach, and it doesn't mean that you have to be a preacher, but we are all people that are to take part in the Great Commission. We're all to do that, and we also teach through our example. The things that we do, do we live a pure life? Do people see our lives or that are ones that reflect Christ in the things that we do, the places that we go? It's very hard to be a good example, you know, for Christ if you're at clubs and bars and things. People aren't going to see you, oh, well, I think that person is a Christian and trying to live a life for Christ. We need to be a life of purity that stands out as an example to others. And we need to be, you know, teaching and preaching to our friends and neighbors. And we show great faith when we do that, when we proclaim the gospel. We also just need to work as hard as we can spiritually by never being content. We shouldn't be content with what we know and with what we do or with how many that we've been able to teach the gospel. We can serve more. We can become more spiritually mature. We can grow stronger. We can get deeper into our Bible study. And we all need to do that. We all need to reach out to those who visit us and be a good proclaimer of the gospel. So these are some easy things. I won't say easy, but these are some things that we ought to be doing as those who have great faith. And it will show up in the way that we live our life. When we come to verse 35 in this passage, verse 35, it changes gears just a little bit in verse 35 and 36. Verse 35 says, women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. And so this kind of turned a little negative from the things that we've seen previously. We've seen examples that are all good examples and examples of victory and confidence and things that were not, you know, particularly, you know, challenging as far as what we see here. Verse 36, others suffered mocking and flogging, even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated. And so this is reflecting something about these heroes that's a little bit different. So rather than continuing to discuss the great things of faith that have been accomplished in the past, this is recording sufferings that they endured. And so when you read carefully what's happened to these, they've been tortured, they've refused to accept release, they've instead chose to have suffering for the cause of Christ. So they had a chance to get out of that, but they didn't. They chose suffering. They suffered mocking, they suffered flogging. Some, you know, suffered arrest and imprisonment. They were stoned, sawn in two, and killed by the sword. And it also reflects that they didn't really have anything materially, had nothing, wearing the skins of animals, destitute, afflicted, and mistreated. And when you get to verse 38, it said, the world was not worthy of them. It's a very powerful statement here. And when you read these couple of verses, it should evoke a little bit of emotion as you think of what these people had to endure. They had no home. They wandered around in deserts, mountains, dens, caves. And you sum up the point of the author here is that great faith sometimes requires great sacrifice. And that's exactly what they did. Great faith makes great sacrifices because of their faith. So in the previous section, we saw the list of what these great heroes of faith accomplished. And now the author wants us to see the things that they had to give up because of their faith. So when we think about ourselves, you know, it should make us think about what is it that I would be willing to give up. When the rich young ruler came to Jesus and said, what do I lack? Jesus told him what he lacked, and he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to sacrifice the riches that he had. and he went away sorrowful. What is our sacrifice for the Lord? What have we given up for the kingdom? You know, we give up a little sleep on Sunday morning so that we can come to services. Now, there's more sacrifice to a life of Christ than losing a little sleep on Sunday morning, or not being able to go hunting on Sunday, or other things that we might have to give up socially. If all we have given up is being, you know, having to come to services when we're a little tired on Wednesday, or having to get up early on Sunday, you know, that's really not saying a whole lot when you compare our sacrifice to what is mentioned here. And I'm not saying that if you haven't suffered any of these things, then they're worthy and you're not. What this is saying is that they made a choice, they made a commitment to the Lord, and when they made a commitment to the Lord, it didn't matter what happened, they were going to stay committed to the Lord. And if it meant that they were killed, if it meant they were flogged, if it meant that they were destitute, if they had to give up riches, they made a decision to serve the Lord. And people today have to make sacrifices as well. And it's different for different people. Sometimes it's they have to give up their worldly friends that they used to have. They may have to give up a job that they liked because the job requires them to do things that a Christian wouldn't do, or it's just, you know, something that is a hindrance to them serving the Lord. They may have to give up relationships with others. They may have to sever ties with their family. Many times there are those, when they decide to serve God, it conflicts with their family's religious views, and it becomes a barrier and causes division. In fact, you remember Kyle Ellison coming here, who is the preacher at Mount Olive, whose family, you know, is a member of a denomination, and he was a preacher for a denomination. It's caused a great rift in his family. But, you know, he read the scriptures, he understood what it was that he needed to do to be a Christian. He realized the group that he was with was not teaching that accurately. They were not practicing that. And he thought he could change them. But he couldn't. He thought he could open up the Bible and show them where they had been teaching this and practicing these things wrong. And they weren't willing to change. And they couldn't believe that he would be one to change. But, you know, he's doing very well as a gospel preacher. When I say he's doing well, he's doing well because he's following the truth. And he's being a good influence to a lot of people and having an impact on the kingdom. But he's also had an impact on his relationship with his family in a negative way. What he chose to do caused division and caused heartache. But he chose the right path. And maybe someday that division can be repaired in a positive way, and his family can be saved. But we'll have to wait and see. But the point is that sometimes when people are faced with a choice like that, they would rather choose peace within their family rather than choose the truth of God's Word. And there are many other examples of that where I've known others that have made that same sacrifice. I'm so thankful that we had peace in our family. And I wonder sometimes what we would do if those of us that have, quote, grown up in the church, we grew up with parents that encouraged us to do what was right and taught us the truth. If we had been in another situation, and maybe it's somebody outside of our family that taught us the truth, and we had to have a division or conflict or some kind of conversation with our families, and a disagreement, you know, what would we choose? Would we have chosen the right path? I pray that we would. And regardless of what it is, what we see here that the Hebrew writer is outlining for us is that these are people that were faced with difficult decisions, ones that cost them their life or their health or their livelihood, and they chose to make a great sacrifice because they had great faith. So we have to do the same thing if that's required of us. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1 says, "Therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, I urge you to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual service." So instead of offering animal sacrifices as they did in the Old Testament, we offer ourselves. That doesn't mean we lay down on the altar, but we know what that means. It means that we offer our life as spiritual service to God. So what do we sacrifice? You know, our work should not be our first priority. Our money should not be our first priority. Sometimes people will not sacrifice their money for God. They will not sacrifice their job for God. They won't sacrifice their comfort for God. They will not sacrifice their standard of living for the Lord. What is said about these that chose that better path is that the world is not worthy of them. Why? Because they were different. That's why it means that the world was not worthy. The world looked at them as being different. The world would not have made those choices. Because they made great sacrifices because of their great faith. And we should be willing to do the same, to make sacrifices in our work, in our the things that we do in school, our hobbies, whatever else might prevent us from serving the Lord as we should do. When we did the lesson in this series on Moses, we made quite a point about the things that Moses gave up or could have had. You know, Moses gave up a potential, almost a certainty that he would have had great wealth, continued to have great wealth in the household of Pharaoh had he stayed there. And it's a hard choice for some to make that choice. If the choice is between being paid well or leading our family in righteousness, what should we choose? I can't remember the number of times that my dad would just be distraught because there'd be a family in the congregation that has decided to move away somewhere. And he wasn't distraught because they were moving away, but he was distraught because the only consideration that they had made in that move was the job. Because he'd ask, you know, well, where are you going to attend congregation? Is there a congregation where you are? And my dad would know usually that there's not. There's not a congregation within 300 miles of where they're going to live. And the fact is that family may not have ever even considered that. The only thing that was being considered when they made that move was the dollar sign. And I know that's probably not the case in a lot of areas, but there are some areas that are kind of remote and don't have a lot of faithful brethren. And so it should be a consideration. That would probably be one of the first things we would think about if we were looking to move. And it probably would be for many of you, is what is the church situation there? Am I going to be able to serve God? Or where will I be with my brethren on a regular basis? It's a consideration for us. But sometimes the only thing people think about is their money and their job and don't think about those other things. Yeah, you might be able to get a job that pays better, but if it makes you serve God less and teach your children less and be able to lead your family in the Lord, you can't do that anymore, then you are making a sacrifice. But you're making the wrong kind of sacrifice. You're sacrificing spiritual things for the dollar. It should be the opposite. The dollar should be sacrificed to have the spiritual things. You look at this list again of what they sacrificed. You know, these things are a lot more important and a lot more severe than having money. But today, people will sacrifice so many things just to have money. The other thing that we see here is that they did not expect any reward now. When you look in verses 39 and 40. Verses 39 and 40. They did not expect any reward now. They knew that would be in the future. After, and all these through though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us they should not be made perfect. So what the writer is saying, when you do great things for God and you make great sacrifices for God, there may not be any immediate, you know, payoff. There may not be any reward now. So if you want to have the pat on the back, if you want to have some recognition, if you want people to know that you are doing something good and you're doing something extra, and that's all your motivation, then that's something that has to stop. Because what you've done is you've turned God's work into a selfish pursuit. When we're serving God because we want to be complimented or we want to receive recognition, we've turned the service of God into something selfish. They did not receive the fulfillment of God's promises while they lived. But sometimes we want attention for what we're doing. What did Jesus say about that when it came to charity? He said, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing when performing acts of righteousness. We need to remember those words. And in Luke chapter 17, verse 10, Jesus said, in the same way, when you have done all you were commanded, you should say, we are good for nothing slaves. We are unprofitable servants. We have done our duty. So those are the words of Christ when it comes to seeking recognition or thinking that you are deserving of something. He reminds us that we're all unprofitable servants. And what we've done is what we need to do in our service to God. So in conclusion of this section of Hebrews chapter 11, we see that great faith does great things. And the great faith will make great sacrifices. And great faith does not expect reward now or human approval. Because if we're seeking human approval, you know, we're seeking the wrong thing. It's good when we can encourage one another and receive recognition from one another. But really, that's not the be-all, end-all of living the life of a Christian, is to seek approval from your peer group, about seeking approval from God, and being faithful to Him so that we can have that reward in the future. But Hebrews chapter 11 is a wonderful passage for us to concentrate on and look at these good examples and what they did and how they chose something that was not always the easy thing, but it was the most profitable thing for their eternity. If you're in any need today, responding to the gospel of Christ, we would like to help you with that if you would come while we stand and sing.